So I'm going to go ahead and call this special meeting to order. A recording and or broadcast of this meeting is being made at the direction of the board, and the recording and or broadcast may capture images and sounds of those attending the meeting. I'm going to, since we're all remote today, as per the governor's order, I'm going to call roll just for the record. So let's see. You guys can unmute yourselves and answer here when I call your name. Mr. Ivanovich?
Present.
Ms. Sirke?
Present.
Ms. Spicer?
Present.
Mr. Talio?
Here.
And I'm here. All trustees are here. So if anyone would like to provide comment on the agenda, we're going to do agenda approval. Please use the raise hand button and turn on your microphone when I call you. Seeing nobody, would someone like to unmute their microphone and move to approve the agenda?
I move to approve the agenda as presented.
Second.
All right. Vladimir moved. Shelley seconded. And we're going to have to do all the votes by roll call tonight, I'm afraid. So, Mr. Talio?
Yes.
Mr. K?
Yes.
Ms. Spicer?
Yes.
Mr. Ivanovich?
Yes.
I vote yes. Agenda is approved. 5-0. Moving on to action discussion items. B1, COVID-19 response and impacts. Staff will provide an update to the board on the measures implemented since schools were ordered closed, effective March 16th. Areas addressed will include LASD virtual school, grading, special education, and school lunch services. A forecast of planning for the future will also be provided. Mr. Baer.
Yes, thank you. Good to see you this evening. We have been busy at work ensuring that education moves forward in the district, and we have a presentation to share with the board what is going on and what has gone on and what we are looking to for the future, since we know we are going to be in this situation for the duration of the school year now. So with that, I'm going to there are a number of sections to this update. We'll have Sandra begin with the instructional portion of it. Jennifer Kiker will join with some highlights around special education, and then Aaron Green has some information as well regarding free and reduced lunch for students. So Sandra, why don't you begin?
All righty. Marcy, next slide there, or whoever is doing it. Thank you. So I wanted to provide you some details now that we are just over 2 weeks into our virtual school to give the board an update. So I want to start kind of that lower left, and on my screen it's cut out, but just a reminder that we're 2 weeks in to a really unusual circumstance, and something we've been reminding staff frequently is this idea that we need to be flexible, we need to give ourselves some grace and have great understanding. But I want to start by giving a huge shout out to our Los Altos teachers and staff. They have been doing a tremendous job kind of getting virtual school up and running for students with very little downtime in between, some planning time for them. So we'll focus a little bit tonight on both the academics and the social emotional. And one of the messages that I sent to teachers just before spring break was this idea that we really want to make sure that we're prioritizing relationships. We know right now that our academics are very important, but right now in this state of uncertainty that's going on around the world, that we want to make sure that our students feel really well connected to their teachers and their peers, since they're not coming to school, traditional school, every day. So when we look at our academics, we've asked the teachers from the get-go to focus on new learning. So it was not a review of past learning, but kind of continuing off where we left off in the physical classroom. And I'll talk in a forward slide around really prioritizing what learning we hope to get through, that we want students to master before the end of the school year. We've asked our K-5 teachers to really focus on ELA and math, English language arts, reading, writing, and math. And our 6-8 students and teachers are focusing on their core subject areas. teachers are providing must-dos in those focus areas and then may-dos in other areas. So we certainly have teachers still providing some access and resources to science or social studies, but we're not really asking families right now to prioritize that because we know that we're all in this kind of unique virtual learning space right now. And so we've been really mindful that that whole class learning and those focus areas be asynchronous. We want teachers, we've asked teachers to make video instructional videos, recorded instructional videos, and to push those out to our students. We know we have families who are sharing devices. We've got families where parents are working from home. We know our littlest learners need a whole lot of handholding to get that virtual learning. So we did not want to put an additional constraint on families by saying, here's when you're going to get your math lesson at 10 a.m., be there or be square. So we have teachers posting these great videos of instructional learning. We also know that the synchronous or the live learning for students is very critical in that academic area. So we have also asked teachers to provide some small group instruction throughout the week, targeted, sometimes that's one-on-one for students who need the most support. And otherwise, it's just meeting with students in small groups to follow up on that academic whole group instruction to make sure that students remain on track, that their questions are answered, that they might get a little something additional that they need to continue their learning moving forward. If we go over to the other side there, the social emotional piece, we've got teachers doing morning meetings each day that kind of sets up that social interaction, sets up the day, provides students an opportunity to interact. We've asked teachers to do some kind of office hour or check-in, especially at the upper grade level. We know we have teachers who are meeting with students in small groups for that social emotional support, just wanting to check in to see how students and families are doing. We had so much great at the first week or two of our teachers reaching out to families to make sure that everybody was up and connected, that they knew if they needed lunch support, where they could get that, if they needed Wi-Fi, hotspots, all of those different pieces, just making sure that we're connecting with students throughout this time. And many of our schools and more are getting on board with just the idea of school-wide spirit. All of those pieces are still happening just like they do in our physical classrooms. And I'll provide some more details around that. Next slide. Not only our classroom teachers, but our specialist teachers and our staff are working hard to support students and to support teachers. So our up at the top there, that list, our specialist teachers are providing content and support. Our music teachers have their own Google Classroom for our 4-6 music program. They're getting daily instruction just like they would. And that holds true for the other areas as well. And when we look at our instructional aides, we've really asked them to do a variety of things, but those include really working with target students who we know require a daily check-in and who need a little additional support to make sure that they continue growing with their learning. We also have instructional aides who are using this time to complete some professional development, which is a great opportunity when we don't always have that time during the school year. We also have a very broad group of instructional staff who are able to provide translation services for us in a variety of departments, which is really terrific. So all of our folks are busy at work making sure that students continue to learn and that teachers have the support that they need. Next slide. I pulled these off of Twitter just to give you a little sense of what's been happening, and it kind of highlights some different things. So up top there, you have Yuli over at Egan. This was a Spirit Day, their gold, blue and gold day. a couple of Fridays ago where she was holding office hours. You can see the kids are in their gear and geared up. So spirit days absolutely continue. Lower left, you have Kimberly Attell did a school-wide morning meeting or Friday assembly and had so many kids and families show up, which is pretty awesome. And that's what it looks like virtually, which is really interesting. Lower middle, you have Alex Schroeder. She's one of our ISTs up at Gardner Bullis and over at Oak. And here she is helping with a math talk during one of the fifth grade math classes. So she's working with a small group of students to get through a math talk up there. Up top of the living classroom continues to provide some resources for families to be able to get out in nature and to kind of give some optional lessons for families who might want some more instruction around science. Upper top right, you have small group instruction happening in math. And then lower right, I threw that up there because there you have Mr. Chan, who is one of our music teachers, who's a part of a morning meeting with Miss Green over at Almond, still wanting to stay connected to students and to teachers to make sure that kids are on track and able to ask questions that they might have. So I thought that just gave a nice snapshot of some different pieces of what virtual school is looking like for students across the district. Next slide. We have, as of, I have a couple on order, but as of last Thursday, we had loaned out 168 Chromebooks, 12 iPads, mostly to our kinder and or first grade students, 43 hotspots, and we've got about 7 more hotspots available at this time to be loaned out. And I hear from our IT department that even still today, I got a request for another Chromebook. Just as we get further down the road of virtual school, families are figuring out what's working for them and what's not working for them, and they're reaching out to their principals. They're reaching out to their tech specialists if they happen to know who that person is at their school site, or they're reaching out to me because I've been a conduit of conversation with families around virtual school. So we are really responsive to make sure that kids have the devices that they need in order to access virtual school, which is great. Next slide, please. Attendance, we do continue to take attendance. We're really taking attendance for our own internal purposes. We want from the get-go, we've wanted to know whether or not our students have the devices that they need to access, that they are coming into virtual school each and every day. So we have asked our teachers to regularly take attendance. I looked into our data zone and it was interesting to see that data point on the left, that's our average yearly to date attendance of 96.86. And over the last week, we actually were at almost 99%, and I just checked it today. We were at 99.09% of attendance. So we have, you know, students who are sick are able to do virtual school from home. So I think that accounts for an increase in our attendance. We just want to continue to monitor when we know that a student isn't attending. Our secretaries are reaching out to understand why. If a student is sick at home, they don't have to attend virtual school. We'll excuse that that attendance for the day or what have you. But we also want to make sure over several days, if students are not attending, that we understand the reason why and that we're making sure that it's not for lack of device or for lack of understanding of what's expected. So I'm happy to report that our students are logging on and participating in their virtual school.
And I'll just add to that, Sandra, with the year-to-date and the past 30-day attendance, it is a little lower than normal that we typically experience as a district. And I would say that was affected by a number of parents choosing to preemptively exclude their kids from school leading up to the school closure.
Absolutely. I think we're usually in the mid 97%.
Yep.
Typically. Next slide, please. Thank you. And then I wanted to share with you kind of our plans and to get some feedback on grading during virtual school. This has been a broad conversation around the nation about what do we want to do for students now that we are asking students to attend virtually. We're asking our teachers to host virtual school with little to no training or small amount of training. So what we've landed on and are looking for some feedback around is this idea of on a report card, students will earn a credit or no credit. And essentially, if students show up and do the work, they will earn credit. We know that students have a wide variety of support at home, and we don't want to use that kind of inequity of support in a way to measure students. We don't know, our teachers are not well trained in the ideas of distance assessment and what that looks like. We certainly want teachers to still be providing feedback to students and families on the critical assignments that we're asking families or asking students to complete during virtual school. But when it comes to the report card, we really just want to provide credit for our courses that we know that students attended virtual school. Other than our two high school courses of algebra and geometry, really none of our credits mean much of anything. It's just a matter of them kind of completing their year. So we'll have some data around the work that students did. But on that report card, we will be asking teachers to move to a credit, no credit mark. And so I would love to hear your comments about that a little bit later. Anything to add on that, Jeff?
No, I think you covered most of it. I think it's that recognition that we are in a landscape that changed suddenly mid-school year. And when, as Sandra said, we were not geared up for, nor had we really gone down the road of deep training in what kind of changes are brought along with this very different instructional and learning landscape.
Yeah, and I'll just add that this is in line with what the state has been recommending, the CDE has been recommending, and the kind of overarching idea is that we don't want to do harm to students. It's a kind of a do no harm mentality during this time, and our surrounding schools are doing something very similar. Next slide. So some next steps for us.
Sandra, we do. There's a hand up there. I'm not sure if it was on this topic, Brian. Looks like Vladimir has a question.
That's Mr.
Okay, thank you.
All right. So some next steps. I sent an email out to teachers. Maybe it was a video. It's all a blur at this point in time. Right before spring break, talking about what our next steps are. We've had kind of 2 weeks to get situated. We made sure our families and our students have what they need. Our teachers got into some groove, and we've really been learning what's working and what's not working. And since that time when we started, we realized that we're in this for the long haul of the school year. So we've talked about some areas of focus for us moving forward for the remainder of the year. And one is that identifying what are those priority learning standards or concepts that we want to make sure we hit hard, because we will not be able to hit them all. So we've been doing some work around that, and we'll share that with principals in the coming week or so before we share that out with our teachers. We want to improve quality of the instructional videos. So we really want to make sure that our videos are succinct, they're on target, there's a clear teaching point, that we're using all the good methods of teaching like models and visuals. So doing some work around the improving video lessons. We want to improve the quality and increase the quantity of live interactions, knowing how important it is for students and teachers and students and students to stay connected during this time. We want to make sure that we have clear expectations for our teachers, so we're working through that. We certainly want to better organize our Google Classrooms for students. Just having now run my own Google Classrooms for teachers during training, it's very easy to get overwhelmed by the organization. So we're working with teachers, or will be working with teachers, on some different ways that they can organize that for students so it feels more clear. And then looking ahead, we really want to make sure that we have a plan in place when school resumes, that we understand what students know and are able to do and where those gaps are. And that is both academically and certainly around their mental health and social emotional readiness to get back to school, that we have a plan to support students and staff when we are able to get back to physical school. So those are some pieces that we will be working on in the coming weeks, and can share more with you as we develop that. At this point, I think I'm handing it over to Jennifer.
Brian, I'm taking questions. If I can just interject, Brian, I'm not sure if it makes more sense here. We have three kind of distinct chunks to this update, if it makes sense to take them one by one or all at once. I'll leave that to you though.
Yeah, well, we can take one by one, certainly for board questions. So is there any board members who want to ask a question of Sandra before we move on? I'm not seeing any raised hands.
I'd like to, but I can't raise my hand, it seems.
Go ahead.
Sandra, first of all, thank you very, very much for being the guinea pig for the very first LASD presentation over video. It was very well done.
Thank you.
The other thing I wanted to say is that I think that you and the teachers have done a really fabulous job. It's actually very difficult to put together an online learning program that works. And research shows that most attempts at it by commercial companies, for instance, are just failures. So putting this together and having it work is tremendous. I think it's really great. So just wanted to thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Jessica.
Sorry, unmuting myself. I have a couple questions.
Yep.
First question is, you were mentioning as it relates to, find it on here, identifying the priority learning for the remainder of the year, then you will share it with the principals and then with the teachers. When do we think that we'll also share it with the parents?
I think it typically goes in that sequence that we share with principals, make sure we have kind of a right plan, then with teachers, and then with parents.
Okay. And also, I guess, let me see what else. As it relates to live interactions, what do we think that the district will be doing to help support that happening at our schools, at our different classrooms?
So we are working on some kind of systematic minimum expectations, so to speak, because we know many of our teachers are doing a morning meeting, but not all teachers. We know some of our teachers are holding office hours. So we're really trying to construct a kind of what would our minimum expectations be so that there is some standardization across the district.
Great. Like you said, it really is important that these kids get some time together. In any way that we can help the teachers make that happen. And also maybe parents would like to help in that regard too.
Yes, and I know many of our principals are also working with their PTAs, their room parent, kind of those different leadership groups on campus to find times to connect students that are not kind of the academic times. But we certainly want our teachers focused on more of that academic and social emotional teaching and learning time, and less on the supervising a yard duty or a lunch time, right? We really want to kind of separate out the two, just like we do in our regular classroom school environment.
And like Vladimir said, this is amazing what you guys have done in so very little time. So thank you very much. I think it would be useful for our community that we're over communicating or communicating more about what we're doing and how we're doing it, whether it's just a small update or a big update. As we're all home, we're hungry for interaction, whether it's an email or office hours or anything like that, even from you and Jeff. So just that's a comment. I think that's it for me.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Vladimir.
I just had one further question. I can understand how all of this works for elementary schools. How does it work for the middle schools? Because there are, you know, 7 different teachers during a day.
Yep. So our students are going to their 7 classes throughout the day and week. We've really given our teachers the guideline of doing no more than kind of 45 minutes total, and that would include instruction and independent practice or homework or what have you. But they are working through at their own pace of what their day looks like. The teachers are holding office hours. You know, we saw spirit days and all sorts of things. So teachers have, students have access to their teachers, but they're also working through their different core subjects. And I know that the junior high, I'm not sure if both have, but for sure one of the schools has done a student survey just to checking in before spring break to see, like, does it feel like it's too much, not enough? You know, what level of access do you have to your teachers? Do you feel like you have enough support and enough work? So as we get that information from students there, I know that they're doing some refining as well.
Thanks.
Not seeing any other hands, so I think we can move on.
Great.
Sandra said a second ago, I think we're moving to Jennifer now to give us an education on special, to give us an update on special education.
All right, good evening, board members. I'm happy to update you on special education in this virtual world. The past 3 or 4 weeks have really been a swirl of communications from both the federal and the state governments. As you know, my program is governed by Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or IDEA, and those federal regulations guide all of the special education processes. So a couple of examples of what those processes, what that would be a triennial IEP. Every 3 years, a student who's in our program needs to have an assessment to determine if they still remain qualified and are eligible for our services. Another example is when a young child who's been receiving services as an infant or toddler, as soon as they, on their 3rd birthday, they become the responsibility of the district to offer supports and services for that kiddo. And so you can imagine with both of those examples, without actually seeing the student or working with a student, it's really hard to be able to do our due diligence and being able to support those students. So that leads into my first point there, where as of this moment, there are no federal waivers on any of those processes right now. The federal government is expecting us to continue along with the expectations as if we were still in session. And so that means all IEP meetings must be held within a calendar year, assessments must continue as best as possible, and our obligation to offer free and appropriate public education, or FAPE, which is the support and services that our department offers, we are held to the same standards as if we were still in session. So we know that that's not reasonable, but that is what our guidance is at the moment. So I'm just trying to put some of that in context for you. The State Department, the California Department of Education, has been deferring to individual districts on how they actually service students. And so they are giving us a bunch of communication. It's really up to us to counsel with legal and look at our own thoughts and what our general education experience is and how to mirror that for our special education students. So we've been doing that in the last 3-4 weeks. And we've been really working and prioritizing our communication to parents. Again, I think as someone mentioned earlier, that making sure parents are aware of what's happening and how and what we need to be doing is very important. So within that first week, we sent home a prior written notice, explained to the parents about the school closure and that they would still be receiving supports and services to the best extent possible. And then we'd be in touch with them soon around what that looks like. And any family member who was, or any family whose student was in the middle of an assessment, either at the beginning, middle, and end, we sent them an individual letter letting them know because of school closure, we'd be working individually with them on the next steps for their unique cases. And then the distance learning plan, which is posted on our website, and it's referenced here in the slide, went out this past week to all families, along with an individualized distance learning plan service for each kid based upon their unique needs. And I'll talk about that a little bit more later. Next slide. So one of the most important questions from our families were individual education plan or IEP meetings, will those continue? And I wanna say that our staff has just done a phenomenal job. Both special education and general education teachers and have about continuing with this. I think maybe there was 2 days where people stopped to kind of regroup, and then after that they've been right on continuing working with families, having general education teachers be there to support, and being able to talk about the progress that the kid made over this past year and what will be our new goals moving forward. So I just really want to give them a shout out how wonderful they've been continuing with that. All of our meetings are being held via remote platform, either video through this Google Meet or sometimes telephone. We're making sure that we still use language support so that our families who are second language learners or speakers are still able to participate to the same extent possible. And then all of the IEP teams are doing individual analysis for next steps. If an assessment was just started, they are going to look to see what other information they can gather, if they can continue on with the information that they have, or if it has been completed and they finish, that they are going to continue on it just with a remote IEP for those assessments. When we are holding those meetings, we're offering a free and appropriate public education, or FAPE. We're offering that for when school is in session. Our offer is not for this remote learning time. Our offer is what would happen, because these IEPs are for a year long, and so we don't anticipate being in a remote learning environment for an entire year, fingers crossed. But so we are offering that, and then we're explaining to parents that this is our offer for when we are in session, but then we talk to them about what that would look like in the interim. And then we had to go through a whole process to get informed consent digitally. So everything in our program relies on signature and consent, and we have hard copies of everything. And in this digital world, it's really hard. So we've worked on what is accepted from the state, what will look for file reviews, what will be hold up and be defensible in the long run. So we've worked on making sure that we've done a process for our staff on how to get informed consent, and at the same time letting parents have that time to be able to really process through what they've heard and what they've seen, and being able to give their consent and their questions in the same manner that they would if we were in session. All right, next slide. Our distance learning plans. This is the last communication we sent out to parents. Again, it is posted on our website, on the LASD website, on the special education page for anyone to look at. And it was really to individualize the instruction and the support and services that's going to happen for each kid. And so in determining what that looked like for each student, we looked at their IEP goals and what of those goals can be implemented through this distance learning. I mean, obviously a goal on public speaking and a large group one on at this time, but most of our goals could be translated to this. And then what were those corresponding services required to be able to have the student meet those goals? We really prioritize maintaining connection with school staff and maintaining that connection with learning. A lot of our students struggle with learning, and so, you know, all of our supports and services are so that they can be connected with that and be bought in and be part of it. And so with this distance learning, we don't want to stop that. So we really looked at for each kid, what did they need to maintain that love of learning? And then we came up with a whole new crop of challenges that happened in this remote learning, because some of our students maybe struggled with executive functioning in the past, but we were able to support that with a classroom assistant in the classroom or some copies of notes or a lot of other things. But now that with Google Classroom, I think Sandra talked about having things in different ways and having it organized, it really sometimes has been a struggle for some of our students on their executive functioning skills. Self-advocacy is another thing we're really working on supporting kids. Some of our students are very passive, and in this environment, it's very easy to continue to be passive. And so we need to work on making sure that they increase their self-advocacy to make sure they're getting the accommodations that their IEP calls for every class. And then keeping that motivation with learning. Again, a lot of the times it's that connection with the teachers. And so we wanna make sure they have that connection and they increase that motivation. So I just wanted to note that all of our supports and services are being offered in the distance learning plan, but they're just not at the same duration of frequency as an IEP, much like in a general ed world, right? We're still offering everything, but it's not in the same duration and frequency. And this distance learning plan is really just meant to be guidance for our team members and for families during these unprecedented times. But our teams have just done a phenomenal job, and I will say that I believe they're very far ahead of a lot of other of our partnering districts in what we've been doing and been able to achieve. Next slide. So some special considerations moving forward for us as well. We really, we've done a great job of really accessing all of our students and being able to work with them. There are a few populations that we are still learning we need to tweak and be able to work on, our young students and our more involved students. A remote platform doesn't really keep engagement. And so we're really working on supporting the caregiver or the parent on that, and then working with them within their family system as what's the best way to do that. And so a lot of parent coaching is happening, and a lot of ways to help set up a schedule at the home that they can work on their IEP goals in smaller chunks rather than in a 6-hour time frame. So those are some special things that we're really working on. How do we support those families very more? Everyone has a very unique kind of system, and so we really are trying to work with them. The other part of access that we're really worried about is that passive access. Not all students have to log on to the morning meeting, or they don't all have to log on to the office hours, but that means they're not getting the extra attention that they might need. Teachers are doing a great job of reaching out and keeping that, but it takes some onus on the student to be a learner. And so some of our students are very passive. And so we're trying to work on how we can add some motivation and to support to help with those passive learners to be a little bit more active within this environment. Another thing that we're looking on is to work on how we progress monitoring our goals. What does that look like in this environment? Again, no one went to school for this. And so how are we making sure that kids are progressing or at least doing the best that they can within an environment towards their goals? And then for our special day classes, how are they making sure they're advancing in their curriculum on top of their IEP goals? They also have their classroom curriculum. So that's something we're working on, and we're moving towards finding out the best practices for those. And then compensatory education. When this is all over and done and our kids have come back to school and we get to know them, we'll be needing to do an analysis about regression and recoupment, kind of how much have students regressed over that and how much have they not been able to recoup within our teaching time, that we might be needing to we definitely will need to offer some sort of compensatory education, maybe not to everybody, but definitely to some folks. And what will that look like? So it's definitely a financial impact there. And that's, again, that's not a Los Altos thing, that is across, it's nationwide something, and we're hoping to get more guidance around what that may look like in the future. And the last part is just really looking at our extended school year as our summer school, but it's really an extension of the school year. And we usually have that in the summertime, and so we are we're planning for that remote, but we're also waiting to hear back from the state if one, verified that it's going to be a remote environment, and two, is that still required? Is that still something that is going to be happening? So again, we're just planning as best as we can with the limited information that we're kind of getting from the state. All right, the last slide. For me, just a few examples. I'm not going to play the video, but just wanted to throw in an example. This is one of our speech therapists on the right. The title is What is AAC, which is Alternative Augmentative Communication. She is our Covington speech pathologist, Andrea, and she is doing a bunch of parent training videos. So caregivers and parents can really understand the device that the student's working on to be able to communicate and what's the best way to support it. So she has that is one of her ways that she's changed her service, is to be able to really front load parents and to give lots of video modeling of how they might be able to incorporate the strategies she uses in the classroom within their home environment. The top left is an example of a student's workstation. Some of our students are really still needing to have some paper and pencil tasks, and so we've created some packets and mailed things there. And this is an example of a parent, in an example that it's turned in. She's taken a photo and turned that in. Below that, the big deal or little deal is an example. One of our behavior therapists at Santa Rita is putting together social skills lessons for those students in that therapeutic program at Santa Rita. And so this is a whole social skills lesson on, are these, is this a big problem or a small problem? And so we are really tapping in with all of our instructional assistants and our behavior therapists to make sure that they are contributing and being part of the school culture. And then below that is it says the special education supplemental resources for distance learning. That's a Padlet that we put together. Christina Murata is the coordinator. And there are so many things out there about best practices and what does this look like. We're just synthesized them for our staff and put them. So we have a Padlet about best practices and working remote learning for students with special needs. And we have that for all of our staff members. That's something we've been working on internally. We continue to update. And then on the bottom right is just a quick cute example of one of our students. It says, I'm proud because I work done. And sometimes we just feel proud because our work is done. And I think that's my last slide. So it does go to Erin Green, the Director of Student and Staff Services, but I'm wondering if there's any questions for me before we move on.
Yeah, do any board members have questions they want to ask? at this point?
There's one question. Jennifer, thanks a lot for your presentation, by the way. As usual, it was really informative. What are we doing for least restrictive environment? Is that something that's even possible for us, or is that just an idea?
And so there, right now, my students are in the same environment as a gen ed student. So it would be considered a least restrictive environment because it's what everybody has equitably across the board. You're at home, you know? So that's not really one of the considerations or worries at this point.
Just one final comment is anecdotal evidence that I've heard is that LASD is light years ahead of where MVLA is in terms of distance learning. And I'm sure the same thing is true for.
And I didn't hear all of that, but what I will say is that we are very blessed to have a wonderful relationship with our teachers. I think that in general, the entire community that we have, the parents have trust in the teachers, and the teachers have trust in the district, and that all together, working together, it was much easier for me as a special ed director to be able to, to come out and have plans and be able to work quickly on getting kids the services that they needed, because some of the barriers that are present in other school districts, we thankfully don't have present, so we can get kids services as quick as possible.
Great. Okay, Steve?
Yeah, I noticed that you talked a little bit about families that are needing, I'm thinking more in the terms of children need a lot of support when they're in our classrooms. What support we're giving to the families, and you touched on a little bit of that. And you also touched on this special education for distance learning geared towards staff members. Is there a version of that we can make available to families to help them out? So they're kind of doing a heavy lift that they're not used to doing as well.
Yeah, so actually a lot of our services are geared towards family members, especially for those populations that I said when we're considerations for access. A lot of our services are done with consultation and parent support, but it's really individualized for their student. But that is where the bulk of our support and services for our higher needs kids have been into that consultation, absolutely. And continues to be, and also the parent. Just if they said one week that maybe this is not the week for speech therapy for me, we don't take that's forever, right? So we're going to come back the following week and see what they're open to, because it's an offer for us. It's there for them if they need it. But we recognize that as family systems, I mean, I'm a parent myself. There are some weeks that I can handle that and some weeks that I can't. But we want it, the equity piece is very important for us. So we want to make sure that we continue to offer and support as needed. And sometimes they just want support and some ideas, and sometimes they want direct therapy. And so our job is to offer what we can in the best extent possible, but then we work very closely individually with each of those parents to see what's reasonable for their family system.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, anyone else? Not seeing anyone. I think we can move on to Erin Green.
Okay.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Hold on here. Good evening, board members. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Great. So during this time that we have been working with homeschooling and online schooling, we have been providing food service for our students who are receiving free and reduced lunch on a daily basis. So you know that we've started at 100 lunches per day, and now we've doubled, and we're at about 200 per day. And when we say lunches, students are receiving a lunch in a bag for that day and then a breakfast for the following morning. We have two sites. We started out with Egan, and Klein Park was added shortly thereafter. Those two locations were chosen based on the convenience for parents where they might easily be able to pick up their children's lunch. So Egan is staffed by Jason Carballer. He is there every day passing out lunches. And then Bridget Stelors, who is our district registrar, and board member Steve Talia was volunteering, and the two of them work at Klein Park daily. And then to serve the food, we're partnering with Mountain View MBLA and also Mountain View Wisman. And Mountain View Wisman is the provider of the food and we're contracting food with them. And one of the really great things is the state and federal guidelines have been relaxed. So we're able to serve to anyone who comes through the line. Parents can drive up. They don't need to have their students present in the car. They can pick up two or three lunches, whatever they might need. And students don't have to eat the meal on campus. So it's very flexible and it's working for families. And we've gotten a lot of great feedback. Do you have any questions about lunch and the food that we are serving?
I have one. We start off, and this is a Mountain View Wisman issue. It's not one that we kind of inherited, is that their milk provider went out of business.
Yeah.
And they're not providing milk with the lunches. Is there something underway we're trying to do to help fix that? Because it's come up. A couple of parents have mentioned it. So we're just
We're aware of that. We discussed that today. And actually, we're contacting Mountain View Wisman right now to see what we can do about getting that back in. So thank you, Steve. And thanks for all that you've been doing to help support this initiative. I'm going to pass it on to Jeff, who's going to wrap up the presentation with one last slide.
All right. Good evening. Thank you to Sandra and Jennifer and Aaron. We, as you can see, have an incredible team that has responded very quickly to the situation. And we're therefore, as a district, really poised to deliver for our kids and just in a good place to move forward from here. So just I want you to understand some of the things we are looking at as a school district, right? As we know, this is for the duration of the school year. So partial list of the items, and this continues to grow as we think about how we normally conduct business. But we know that school sites are going to be closed for the duration of the year through June 10th. There are innumerable details that need to be worked out as a result of no students and teachers being on campus, right? As a couple of examples, classrooms are typically packed up and prepared for summer cleaning. How we are going to handle that now is a question that we're working through. We think about instruments and student possessions and all sorts of things that we know are sitting there on campus in either desks or lockers. I don't even want to think about PE uniforms sitting in lockers, but undoubtedly those exist as well. But there are just many, many, many details that we are actively working through and triaging and game planning. As the days and weeks unfold here. Jennifer mentioned a bit earlier, but just mental health of all involved is something that we are addressing as we can now, but also thinking about when students, staff, and parents return to school, just thinking about what their condition will be, right? What their mental health will be like coming out of this very lengthy quarantine, and their world really changing. So we're looking at that. As Sandra described, we are developing this interim plan, and we will continue to adjust it as time goes on, and as we learn both about our own best practices and collaborate with others around this. We want to be responsive to this changing environment as it happens. There is also recognition that we as school district employees, every single one of us, are sign an oath to be a disaster service worker. Which is if the governor or a county executive, who is the person who is the essentially superintendent of the Santa Clara County supervisors, right? Similar role. If they call an official disaster declaration, that activates all of us who have signed that oath. So we are doing some work readying for that. Should that happen, there's not indication that it will, but we know we are in one of those unique situations that it could occur. And then just thinking about these continued shelter in place implications. What does it mean for summer school and the extended school year, as both Sandra and Jennifer alluded to? What if we can't have face-to-face summer school? Do we have a distance learning version of summer school? And then looking even further ahead, what are the implications for the 2021 school year? That is, gosh, I even hate to say this, that's only about 4 months off the beginning of that school year. And so we certainly need to be thinking about that, and recognize also that we are responsive to the environment in which we're living right now. So we have to be ready to be agile and respond as necessary. So those are some of the things. I know Randy has a presentation following up here that talks about financial considerations as well. All of these do fall into the looking forward category that we're all keeping an eye on. So happy to answer questions about any of that or anything that came before as well.
Thanks, Jeff. Does anybody have any questions for Jeff before we take public comment, and then we'll have board discussion after public comment? So any?
Yeah, I had a question. It's related to summer school. How are we going to identify the students that we're going to put into summer school? The metrics are really different from what we've been using in the past. And so I was just curious how that was going to happen and what was going to be used for that.
I'll let Sandra comment, but I'll start. It is something that we are talking about right now and trying to work through and figure out.
Yeah, for our literacy focused summer school, not the extended school year through special education, but just as we were going into closure, we were collecting the latest round of data from our Fontes and Pinnell rating benchmark assessment for students who are below the line. But it's so hard to know how it will all play out between now and June, kind of that expectation of where we normally would expect students to be in June. It's just, they're not going to be there. We just can't replicate that school experience. So we really have to figure out whether or not we can identify the right kids, whether or not there would be benefit if it was a virtual experience, whether or not there would be benefit in providing a virtual version of literacy intervention. I mean, these are all questions that we're kind of chattering about right now, what that might look like.
Okay, thank you. I don't want to mention the LCAP because I know that that's something that you really enjoy. So I won't mention the LCAP, but I would like to ask Jeff, can we continue in future years the opting out of the CASP testing?
I know from your history that you would be a fan of that, but I don't think it's going to be possible.
All right. At this point, we're going to take public comment on this agenda item. So for the attendees to comment on this agenda item, members of the public should use the raise hand button if using the Zoom app, or plus *9 if you're dialed in on your phone. Marcy Burney will announce each person's name and unmute you. And following your comments, Marcy will mute you again, cancel the raised hand, and move on to the next speaker until each attendee wishing to speak has done so. Each speaker is going to have 3 minutes, and we actually even have a timer as part of our gallery view here. So I see at least one attendee. So Marcy, if you want to start.
Sure. Okay. So Amy will be our first speaker. Amy, are you there?
I got it. She can go ahead now.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff.
I think you might have punted her accidentally there, Jeff.
There we go. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Amy.
Oh, great. Yeah, this is Amy Madsen. I'm a Covington parent of a third grader, and we also have adult kids who went to Santa Rita, and we had the good fortune of overlapping with Sandra McGonigal there. Jeff and Sandra, I know how hardworking you are and committed to our district, you know, knowing you, seeing you in action for a long time, and I thank you for your years of dedication, and even more so during these unprecedented times. You know, I can't even imagine, or I have some inkling now. But my objective in speaking now to Jeff and Sandra and the board, and thank you to you for your commitment. I feel as if I've voted for at least all of you at least one time. Sorry for the jokes. But I want to confirm that you received an email from me today representing the voices of 34 Covington parents, representing our 44 students. And to be sure, I've been thrilled with all of my daughter's teachers at Covington during the at-home learning period. The quality of the instructional videos have been exceptional. As wonderful as the videos are, this group of parents is asking for some sense of normalcy for our kids. We are asking for daily live virtual interactions in some capacity between teacher and full class and or teacher to small groups. Sandra, in your slide with the virtual interactions, there are some parents who have not received any communication for any upcoming teaching teacher to full class or teacher to small group interaction. Within the past 2 weeks of home learning and spring break behind us, the kids are entering a long stretch. It was super encouraging, Sandra, to get your letter on Thursday stating that LASD seeks continuous growth and improvement of our members, students, and teachers, with a specific reference to increasing the quantity of live interactions. I left out quality because we already have the quality. That's a given from our great teachers. Sandra, thank you for your leadership role in moving the next phase forward and presenting to the board tonight. We can appreciate the thought and work that must have gone into this well before your email, amid everything else the district and principals and teachers have been focused on, including the immediate needs of families in need of devices and hotspots and meals. To be sure, many teachers were doing this before the break, and many are rolling out more virtual interactions. We're very thrilled with all of these initiatives. We know that LASD and our very talented and dedicated teachers will continue to set the bar for revolutionizing learning. We look forward to learning the detail behind increasing the quantity of live interactions so our kids can get some sense of normalcy back, that important connection between teacher and students. Finally, please survey all for feedback on what's working and what could be improved, like at one of the middle schools you referenced, Sandra, did. A number of people, you know, do feel in the dark. So those are my comments, and thank you very much to everyone for all of your efforts.
Okay. Marcy, do we have anybody else who wants to comment?
I don't see anybody else.
Okay. We will then move to board discussion. Does anybody on the board want to put their hand up? Make additional comments, thoughts? Vladimir.
This is unusual, but you know, what the heck.
Steve.
Yeah, why not? It's unusual times. So I just want to reiterate some of the things that have been said already. I think the transition and the speed of transition that the district has pulled off has been pretty amazing. I appreciate the patience of the parents while we go through this and understand that it is an evolving process and understand that we are aware that it will be an evolving process through the end of the school year. I just think the work that was put in to launch it so quickly and the quality of what's gone on has been pretty amazing. Standing on a corner in Mountain View, I get to talk to people, at least one segment of the population a lot. And it's been helpful for those families to have that interaction that they're having and they're seeing with their classroom. So thank you to everybody, staff. And the reason I'm doing the street corner thing is really because I know y'all are busy with something important that I can't do. I can do this part. So that's why we want to make sure you guys are all doing, have the resources and support you need to be successful. Bumped into a teacher downtown. She was doing her video, instructional video at 2 a.m. so she could be on with her classroom in the morning. So understanding that the workday for teachers have actually gotten a lot longer. So question, just something to think about as you were going through this, is that there some way of sharing instructional videos across classes so that not everyone has to create their own? If you're already doing that, great, but it seemed at least one person was up trying to make things continue to be interactive and great for her classroom. So anyway, thank you.
Okay, Jessica, you're saying?
I'm going to unmute myself. I just wanted to reiterate that, slightly in reaction to what Amy said, is that I do see that we're heading into the iterations, that we are heading into more of what have been asked for by these parents. We are heading into more live interaction. So I'm glad to see that. And I'm glad I saw that in Sandra's letter last week. So I'm really impressed with what we've done from the beginning and what you had already already had in place for the district before this. So that's pretty much it.
Okay. Shali, anything?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, I want to thank our district and our staff for moving so quickly on this and for the tremendous amount of work that you've all done. I just had a quick question about whether, so I'm kind of worried a little bit about summer learning loss that kind of happens even in a good school year. Are we planning on giving our kids any sort of summer work to do over the summer? Not necessarily summer school, but just some packets or something to go home with.
Again, I'll start. Sandra, you can follow on if necessary, but we don't know yet, right? We are working on that. We're assessing that. It certainly will make a difference whether it is in person or virtual. That will strongly influence our direction and decision on what we're going to do. But please know it is something we're actively talking about. We just don't know the answers to those questions yet. It is in the queue of one of those questions that we need to figure out.
Yep, what Jeff said.
Okay, Vladimir?
Just a comment on some comments that people have made. We need to understand, and I'm sure that you're doing whatever you can to do that. We need to understand any issues that are coming up. But the one thing I don't want to do, at least, is prescribe a solution to you. So if children are not getting the interaction that they need, that's the problem. But saying that, okay, we have to have 6 hours, 6 hours a week of live interaction, that may not be the right solution. And that's what I'm looking to you for to specify. So identifying issues or problems is fine, but I'm reluctant to say this is the way you should solve that particular problem. That's all I wanted to say.
And we appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. So I'll echo a lot of what's already been said. Going back to, I think, Sandra, you had asked for sort of reactions to the grading, credit, no credit grading. And I understand, I think, the dynamics there. My main concern is that we don't lose as much granularity as we can get. I mean, I feel like in some ways we were ahead of this whole curve, because part of the idea of the shift behind to standards-based grading was to shift away from the, high danger, ABC everything, and to something more nuanced. So I just want to make sure, especially given, as you guys have said, that there's going to be a recovery period, that we're going to need to figure out what gaps kids have and figure out how to fill them, that we don't lose that and there's sort of a blanket credit. So I don't know whether that's showing different things to the parents than we record internally or what that is, but that's my main concern there. And then I think my other question was just, I think generally for you, Jeff, I know you're in sort of constant communication with other superintendents and with the county public health department and the county board and all the rest of that stuff. So I trust that you'll let us know if you run into issues there that you would like us to try to tackle or elevate on our end as far as figuring out details. And I mean, it does sort of feel like in the next few weeks, we're going to need to get more details from the county health department as far as what they see of the road forward and what the restrictions might be and start to plan. Oh, the other question I had actually for you was whether there was anything that we should do in terms of adjusting the calendar as far as extra professional development days or more professional learning time for teachers or just anything like that. I sort of assume that you'll bring those to us if you identify needs there, because as you guys have said, we're asking teachers to do something they've never done before and never trained for. So it would not at all surprise me if they needed a few more professional development days or some other support that we could provide.
Right. Sandra, maybe you can talk just a little bit about the role the ISTs are playing right now.
Yeah.
And Brian, to your point earlier about bringing to the board issues that we need support on, absolutely. And I will be sure to continue to ensure you're updated on the landscape as it changes too, and where the board may need to weigh in on some things or enact policy changes or whatever that might be.
I will just add, I'm so thankful for the broad CNI team, which includes our instructional support teachers and all of us moving into this virtual school reality. They were a huge help in getting those supports in place for teachers. A lot of what the work, our ISTs have been kind of doing two things. One, helping teachers get up to speed, because we had a wide variety of teacher readiness around launching into virtual learning. So they've been really critical working with principals and teachers, making sure that every teacher can kind of launch into virtual school. And then they've also been creating a bank of resources, projects, high interest, academic, social, collaborative resources that we will launch to teachers in the next kind of week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks over the course of time, knowing that our teachers and our students might need a little bit of a break from kind of the monotony that we've been going down. You know, you have your morning meeting at 8:30 or whatever, right? That just to put in something fresh, it will provide teachers a little bit of a break. So we are also planning to offer some very targeted professional development virtual opportunities for teachers who want to opt in. So they could choose to kind of push in a plug and play, high interest, high impact project into their virtual classroom for the day and take a step out and do some learning around how might I improve my instructional videos, or how might I better engage students in live interactions, or what does a really high quality virtual morning meeting look like? So we'll be having some opportunities for teachers in that upcoming time with hopefully an easy replacement, so it doesn't feel like they have to do sub plans normally when they come to a professional development time with us during the school year. So we are looking forward to launching that with teachers in the coming week or two.
Great, thanks. All right, anybody else? Seeing nobody, I think we're ready to move on to B2. Mr. Kenyon will provide a financial update.
Randy, you're on mute.
No, I know. Am I unmuted?
Unmuted now.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes.
Thanks. I was trying to unmute, and I think Marcy was at the same time. So before I even get into the slides, just a few general comments. Obviously, there are just a lot of unknowns right now. It's anyone's guess on how long this pandemic will go on and what the ultimate impact of it will be on our economy. So that sort of underlies everything that's happening in part of my slides. For the upcoming year, based on what I know right now, I think we're probably okay. A bigger concern is the following year, the 21-22 fiscal year. Typically schools and typically basic aid districts are affected more more about 12 months or so after a recession starts to hit in the economy. I think we need to plan for the worst, and so we don't get caught short later on. We need to start implementing savings where we can, making sure our reserves are adequate, maybe increasing them. We have to develop contingency plans. We got through the last Great Recession in 08, 09, 010, and 2011 because we took quick action, we were prepared, and we will be doing the same thing here. So with that said, let's move to the slides. And this first slide just sort of summarizes the different topics that I'll cover. So we can move on to the next slide, Marcy. So property taxes. So our assessor met with the assessor a week or so ago. The assessor is pretty optimistic about next year. The assessor still expects the growth in the assessed value to be over 5%. As you see from the slide, our roll growth currently is at 5.35% through the end of March. But the assessor is worried about future years, not so much next year. One of the interesting things is the annual inflation factor. Everybody knows that as the 2% annual growth. Well, 2% is the cap on annual growth for inflation. And it is possible for the inflation factor to be negative. In fact, it was 1 year during the Great Recession. So keeping an eye on that on top of everything else is important. I think it's on the next slide. I want to talk a little bit about the TEETER plan. Every county in California, so Marcy, you can go to the next slide. Every county in California regulates property taxes. They have their own rules and regulations. In our county, we operate under what's called the TEETER plan. And the TEETER plan basically guarantees all agencies that are funded by property taxes 100% of what the assessment is for, whether or not there are delinquencies or not. So the county guarantees that for us. I'm a little concerned about that. That may be in jeopardy. It could be in jeopardy as soon as this year, depending on how much the collections are in the current year. If there's not enough money collected, then the county will not be able to distribute 100% to school districts, cities, other agencies in the county. We may know more in a couple of months, but we won't really know until August for sure. Obviously, a big concern is more and more people are on unemployment and may not be able to afford to pay their taxes. We will get an update in May, and I'll have a lot more information then. I'll be sharing that with you, probably a May board meeting in which we talk about property taxes and the state's May revise. So moving into the state on the next slide. I think you know this, the state has been planning for a workload budget, which basically means no new programs for the state for next year. The plan would be to fund a COLA and to fund growth where it occurs. In our circumstances, K-12 education, enrollment's actually declining. So it's negative growth for us, which is a little bit helpful financially. But other agencies may be experiencing some caseload growth, in which case the state would have to fund that. The special ed augmentation that the governor proposed in January is certainly at risk. That was the proposed increase of close to $100 per student, and having all the SELPAs having a fixed dollar amount per student in terms of the funding level. That could mean up to $400,000 for us. I would say that's likely to be, it's certainly at risk of being chopped when the state goes through its budget deliberations. What I hear from Sacramento is that we expect the state to plan their budget based on what they knew at the time, that most of their information is pre-COVID-19. So they'll be developing a budget, deliberating, and assumedly both in the May revise and in June, passing a budget that they may have to adjust come August or September. They will want to wait and see what property tax collections are and what the personal income tax collections are for the 19-20 year before they finalize their budget, which would be a little unprecedented. Normally, the June adoption is the final budget, but they do have the ability to make an adjustment in August or early September. So we need to be aware of that. So that's a bit about the state. Moving on to the next slide. I think on my slide previously, I noted that state revenues are highly impacted by personal income taxes. And so personal income taxes are obviously highly at risk right now. Stock market volatility is, you know, stock market swinging one way one day, another way the next day. But it's certainly down. It's not down as a third of what it was before, but it's still down considerably from where it was 2 or 3 months ago. That volatility also affects our two state pension systems, the state teachers retirement system, STRS, and the public employees retirement system, PERS. They have significant funds invested, so they're highly dependent on their investments. And we don't have any concrete information right now, but we're kind of have to watch, keep close tabs on that. Interestingly, just out this past week, the PERS committee that makes a recommendation to their board actually has recommended a decrease, a small decrease of about 0.25% in their employer rate for next year and future years, which is kind of against the grain from what we might expect. Anyways, stock market volatility, the whole economy is definitely going to have an impact on where we stand financially. So move to the next slide, Marcy.
Hey, Randy.
Yep.
Just on that previous slide, I think it's important to just clarify that as a district, we pay into STRS and PERS while employees are, or while people are employed by the school district. Can you just comment on that?
Yes, we pay a payroll tax, and you can see the rates at the bottom of the slide for STRS and PERS, both current year and then the growth in those rates over the upcoming years projected, the projected growth in those rates. And we do pay into those systems while our employees are, well, people work for us and are employed by us. Once they retire, the state pays their retirement checks. We do not. So moving on, Marcy. So next couple of slides are about what I'm seeing for the current year in terms of possible revenue losses, changes in expenses. With the school closures, we do not have users of our facility, so I'm expecting a loss that could be as much as $220,000 based on our collections to date for the year and how much time is left, essentially 3 to 4 months of closure. Developer fees, while they're not in our general fund, the issue there is more likely that they're likely to be delayed rather than canceled. That's an assumption, but it's purely a cash flow issue rather than a revenue loss, I think. Eventually, projects will come aboard and we'll get the developer fees from those. We have several tenants. We have tenants on our 10th site, and when we've been working with Federal Realty, who is our property manager, there's a proposal that they defer the rental payments for April and May until October. And so I've told our consultants that I think the board is okay with that direction for now. That's the discussions that we're beginning to have with the tenants through Federal Realty, who is our property manager. Our other tenants are our childcare and preschool tenants on all of our sites. So we may be able to work out a deferral system with them, although I think it's less likely for them to be able to make up whatever losses in revenue they achieve that they've suffered during the time that they're closed. So it may be that we have to give them some rent relief when everyone is able to open back up, our schools are able to open, and our tenants are able to resume their programs. So those are potential revenue losses that I can see right now. If we go to the next slide, there are some savings I expect because schools are closed. We're using less power and water. So I expect our utility bill to be significantly lower, as much as $200,000 compared to what we were projecting at second interim time. I think Sandra may have indicated this in her presentation, or maybe Jeff did, somebody did. We don't have the ability to have in-person in-service training, so we need fewer substitute teachers during the last 4 months of the school year. We have less need for substitute custodians. And so I could see savings as much as $200,000 in the area of substitutes of various kinds. And I've also indicated there may be some other savings in the contracted services area, again, as much as $50,000. So those are the areas that I've identified as possible adjustments in the current year that'll affect our bottom line. Roughly, they pretty much offset each other at this point. So I want to move on to the next slide, getting near the end. Right now, you've obviously read and heard about the federal stimulus package. Not really clear how much is going to come down to our district. There's a lot of unknowns as to how, first it goes out to the states then deliberate on how that money is going to get trickled down to us. We are potentially able to avail ourselves of FEMA funding, Federal Emergency Management Agency funds, under the emergency relief provisions. So there is a requirement to get in the queue before April 17th. We are already in the queue. So at least we're in a queue. So if there ever is an opportunity for us to get some funding through FEMA, we will be there applying for it. There is one concrete piece of funding that we will be getting, about $72,000 from the state through a recently passed Senate Bill 117. That can help us offset some of the costs that we've incurred during the pandemic for cleaning supplies, for some of the technology we've needed, for a variety of other things as well. I guess we're getting to the last couple slides. Next slide, Marcy. Yeah, I indicate there's a lot of unknowns, obviously, and what that might mean for us. I think the idea of a workload budget like the state is doing makes sense for us. That's not atypical from what we've done in the past, where I often called it a status quo budget, where we take our current program and move it forward 1 year. I think that's similar to a workload budget. We need more specific information, particularly about property taxes, before we think about expanding any programs for sure. Talk about possible savings in a minute. At the bottom of this slide, I indicate that I ask if there's any direction that you want to provide, and you can answer that when I finish my presentation. And I will be presenting additional information in May when we get the state May revise from the governor on his projections for revenues for the current year and the upcoming year, as well as an update on property taxes. So looking ahead to the last slide, if we need to start paring back our expenses, we can look to what we've done in the past. During the Great Recession, we go back there, we can look at our recent Budget Review Committee and CACF, Citizens Advisory Committee for Finance recommendations. Some of the other things I've listed here, sometimes they're on all these lists, sometimes they're not. Increasing class sizes where possible, certainly tightening up on staffing. We've done that a bit this year. We can continue to do that. In the past, we've talked about possible combination classes that hasn't always worked successfully. At least it's a financial option or lever we could implement if we chose to. I know this is not popular right now, but reducing or eliminating instructional coaches. You can see Sandra's thumb going down, reducing in-service training at the same time. These are things that we could do as early as next year. Some other things would take longer. Furlough days is something that we negotiated with our employees back during the Great Recession, where we're in the work year was shortened in order for us to achieve savings in salaries. And certainly consolidating schools to reduce our overhead costs is another option that is not for next year, but certainly could be under discussion for future years if we needed to go into that depth. That's pretty much what I have right now and what I know. I'm certainly getting a lot of information. Our chief business officers meet every week virtually for a couple hours on Thursdays, have several conversations almost weekly with school services staff and other statewide groups and individuals. So a lot of information. Again, a lot of unknowns. This is very uncertain times. This isn't news to you. So it's all about let's stay tuned, see what's coming around the corner, and we'll start to address the things that we can address as quickly as we can. So with that, I'm going to turn it back to you, Brian, for questions and comments.
Okay. Thank you, Randy. Are there any preliminary board questions before we take public comment? Any heads? Nope. All right. So we will now take public comment on this agenda item. To comment on the agenda item, members of the public should use the raise hand button if using the Zoom app or press *9 if you're dialed in on your phone. We will announce each person's name and unmute you. Following your comments, Marcy will mute you again, cancel the raised hand, and move it on to the next speaker until each attendee wishing to speak has done so. Each speaker will be given 3 minutes. Do we have anyone who wishes to speak?
I do not have any requests.
All right. Seeing none, we will move on to board discussion. So, Steve? No? Jessica? Anything? Nope. Vladimir?
I do have a question. And that is, has to do with the 10th site and the Federal Realty deferring rental payments. Does that mean that in October, the tenants can expect to get to have to pay twice as much rent as they're paying now per month?
Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah.
So Vladimir, the proposal right now is to defer rent for 2 months, April and May, and that they would pay their April and May months, the combination of those two amounts, over a 3 month period starting with October. So October, November, December, in addition to their regular rent, they would pay back those 2 months that were deferred.
Okay, thanks. What do you think their likelihood of doing that is?
I was on a conference call today with our attorneys regarding that. I think it's about 50-50 right now, Vladimir.
Okay, thanks.
Charlie, anything? No. Okay. I think the only question I have is, Randy, as you said, a lot of the sort of cost-cutting options would be things we'd have to consider over a longer period of time. So I guess my question is, for you and Jeff, is whether you guys are, you know, taking any preliminary steps around this already, or if there are deadlines coming up that we should be aware of. I'm particularly thinking about hiring, because I know we've been pushing in recent years to hire earlier rather than later, but given the uncertainty, I'm not sure where we are with that.
We have certainly
Yeah, we have certainly slowed the hiring. We had made a couple of early hires, which we're confident we're going to have the attrition on, but we have and those happened prior to all of this. So we have hit the pause button on that.
Okay. Anything else? Not seeing anything else. I think we can move on to B3, Comprehensive School Safety Plans. Ms. Green will present each school safety plan for consideration of approval.
Okay, hi again. So I'm not gonna go through every slide. Why don't you go to the next slide, please? Uh-oh, I think that might have been, oh no, perfect. So you've had an opportunity to review the 10 comprehensive school safety plans, including the district office plan as part of the board packet. And the plans that were submitted to you are essentially the same plans that were submitted last year with some additions and edits. Do you want to go to the next slide, please? Couple different things that are new this year. Again, they're more than a safety plan. The comprehensive plans are their crisis response manuals, their bullying and suicide prevention plans. And then new this year, we added our board policy, which was recently adopted for student grooming and dress. And then we also have added our infectious disease and pandemic planning document as well. Next slide, please. And as you can see, the benefits of school planning, there are many benefits of having a safe schools plan, but number one, I think, is that we're prepared. And we've really noticed that this year, that by having that pandemic plan in place, that's really helped us to launch and be really prepared for what we've done in the last couple weeks. Next slide, please. The next three slides, I'm just gonna go quickly, but these are the Ed Code mandates and the requirements for each plan. So you can just go. And then one more. And these are the categories if you want to take a look at the. Okay, so moving on, one more. So each plan has specific site goals, and there's a physical site goal as well as a climate site goal. And the physical is around the place and the physical look. And I have somebody in the background, oh dear. I just realized that. There's a physical goal, and then there's also a climate goal, and that's around people and programs. So next slide, please. So for the district this year, some of our goals were that we were going to create and implement a dress and grooming policy, which you saw. Also new this year, which was mandated in January of 2020, the mandatory sexual harassment training for all employees. And we started that actually back in August. And then the other piece that we've done is created and implemented our infectious disease and pandemic plan. And then as a larger goal for our entire district, we're really working on improving the mental health supports at all of the school sites. Next slide. So I extracted all of the site goals from each of the schools just so you could have them for your review and perusal. And most of the goals are pretty similar to the goals that you saw last year when these were brought to the board. So you can just scroll briefly. And then, are there any questions?
Any preliminary board questions other than the name of the cat in the background?
Sorry. I did not know that was happening.
Yeah, I do have one. So on recent Ed Code updates, there's a comment about active shooters and other armed assailants. And I didn't see any of that in the individual school plans, and I could have very well missed it. I searched for active shooter and stuff like that and didn't see anything. So I'm just wondering. Yeah, go ahead.
So in the appendices in the back, there's an at the very back of the plan prior to the pandemic response plan, it lists all of the different types of emergencies. And I believe it's lockdown, intruder. I don't have the plan in front of me, actually. I can pull one up. But it's also our lockdown planning, which is referred to. Can I get back to you about exactly where that is, Vladimir?
That's fine.
Yeah.
There's an armed assault on campus on its Appendix D. And the Covington plan, it's on page 39.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Anybody else? Preliminary questions? We will take public comment on the agenda item. To comment on the agenda item, members of the public should use the raise hand button if using the Zoom app or press star 9 if using your phone. I don't see Marcy. Do we have anybody?
I don't see any requests for comment.
Okay. Any further board discussion?
Step one, underneath the pandemic response, the page 64 at the top, the first bullet point, refers to the fact that the public health officer or the superintendent can shut down a school, schools, or the district. But it says the county, not the district. I think you wanted to put the district in that reference, not the county. Because if we're putting Jeff in that role, he can't shut down the county. Unless I'm reading it wrong, unless that was meant to be the county superintendent, which then it's right. I didn't read it that way.
No. I don't have it in front of me. I apologize.
No problem. And if I read it wrong, I apologize. But it said public, it might be referring to the county superintendent had that right.
I need to look at that. Hold on, let me just see if I can pull that up. Steve, can I take a look at that? And then I'll make corrections. That was one of the items that we actually took feedback on at the last board meeting.
Exactly. That's what I thought you were trying to do. Yeah. Is local comments in the last board meeting there. And I think what we were trying to do is say, based on what's going on, if I were to word it myself, I would actually say the superintendent can take action. I'm through something to do with in alignment with our partner districts, because that's exactly what we did this time.
Right.
We shut down based on our partner districts. The county then stepped in a couple hours later and shut the district down anyway. But
right.
We had actually taken action in advance of that. So just to have the future superintendents have that leeway without having to call a board meeting to do it might be a smart thing to put in place.
Yep, I'll review that piece and make sure it's accurate.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? All right, so this is recommended for approval. So would anyone like to make a motion to approve the comprehensive school safety plans?
I move to approve the comprehensive safety plans.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Any further discussion? So that was Jessica Spicer made the motion. Shelley Serke seconded. So we're going to call roll for the vote. Mr. Talio?
Yes.
Mr. Ivanovich?
Yes.
Ms. Spicer?
Yes.
Mr. Kay?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion to approve school safety plans passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you. I'm going to stick around, but I'll just take my camera off here.
All right, moving on to B4, Memorandum of Understanding with Los Altos Teachers Association. The board will consider approval of Memorandum of Understanding with the Los Altos Teachers Association addressing impacts of the COVID-19 school closure orders. Mr. Baer. You got to unmute, Mr. Baer.
There we go. So as a function of the unusual circumstance we are in, we have come to agreements with memoranda of understanding with both our Los Altos Teachers Association as well as the California School Employees Association Chapter 103. Those are items E4 and E5. We're ultimately looking for board approval on these two items. you have the attached, or you have the MOUs attached to the agenda. So I'm happy to answer any questions on these. In general, the MOU for the teachers highlights some adjustments in evaluations, right? We don't want to be evaluating teachers on their current situation with distance learning. So we're acknowledging that in the MOU. Another important piece in the teacher's MOU is the actually it's now irrelevant, but I was going to say this was drafted. I'll also make clear this MOU was drafted prior to the decision by the state to not have students return to campuses for the remainder of the year. So it had provision. What I was going to say is it has a provision to allow the teachers one day of non-instruction should we return in order to go back to their classrooms and reestablish physical order in the classroom before students arrive, but we won't be needing that. I'm happy to answer any questions in there though. This is a document that we will want to revisit with teachers now that we have closed for the balance of the school year. There are other considerations that we're going to have to take care of. So I anticipate this is a document, though we're looking for approval of this for the moment. There will be updates to this that we'll bring back to the board.
Okay, any preliminary board questions? No, we'll take public comment. To comment on this agenda item, members of the public should use the raise hand button or press *9 if using your phone. I see at least one. So Marcy, why don't we start?
Go ahead, Roberta.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for all your tireless work that you've been doing. And I just want to reiterate what Jeff said, that we had signed this before the governor had decided that schools would stay closed all the year, and we would like to discuss some things going forward, which Sandra's alluded to earlier, as well as Jeff. So we appreciate the support, and I just have heard comments from you all night that understand how hard this is for teachers, parents, families, students, the community in general, and we're doing our best, and it is a stressful time, but we're here to serve. So thank you for your help and your support, and we'll be talking to you again soon, I'm sure. Thanks.
Thanks, Roberta.
Thank you, Roberta. Anyone else?
I don't see any more requests for comment.
All right. Seeing none, moving on to board discussion. Anybody have any further discussion or comments? Shaking heads. All right. Who would like to make a motion to approve the memorandum of understanding?
So moved.
Second.
All right. Any further board discussion? If not, I will call the roll. Mr. Kay?
Yes.
Mr. Ivanovich?
Yes.
Ms. Spicer?
Yes.
Mr. Taglio?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion was made by Charlie, seconded by Vladimir, passed 5-0. Moving on to item B5, Memorandum of Understanding with the California School of Employees Association, Chapter 103.
All right. Similar comment on this. I'll point to Aaron. Aaron, any particular comments or highlights from the CSEA MOU?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, well, I can't do the video, but I can unmute. So actually, this was signed even before the teacher's MOU was signed. So some of it isn't as relevant. Some things have already changed. Like the first one says that we will inform our employees if there is someone that is found to have the COVID-19 or the corona disease. And that's not even relevant anymore. We can't do that. couple different things. It's basically highlighting that our employees who are 65 years and older or who have chronic illnesses or who have been exposed to the virus, they do not have to provide a doctor's note, and they are not working at this time. We have all of those people at home. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Having ample supplies to be cleaning was part of the negotiated agreement. And something else that's not relevant anymore was that if we were going to talk about additional days at the end of the school year, we would negotiate about that, but that's not relevant anymore. And then we talked about just the loss of pay, that if we were going to be doing that, that we would be negotiating with the CSEA Association.
So quick comment on the first point Aaron mentioned. I think you're all aware, but I'll just clarify that with regard to notification of employees or people who have tested positive for COVID-19, that's no longer something that County Department of Public Health is doing. They are assuming there's community spread, so they are not notifying. I'll just speak for school districts. They are not notifying school districts of positive tests anymore, as they were early on back in February and early March.
Yeah.
Thanks, Aaron.
Yep.
Okay. Any preliminary board questions? No, seeing shaking heads. Aaron, I just one quick question. I'm just out of curiosity. There's an item here about bargaining unit employees 65 years or older who have chronic illnesses. Do you know how many that is, roughly?
You know, I'm trying to think. The illnesses, I probably a handful right now. The pre-illnesses, but 65 and over, we have both members in our Teachers Association and in CSEA who are not working right now. Some who are over 65 who are working from home, but we do have people identified in both.
And you know how many, roughly?
I don't know the exact number.
Okay. It's not super important. I just, in the run-up to the closure, there were, I know some districts, one of the first districts closed because they had something like 30% of...
Right.
Of their employees were going to fall into that bucket. So it's just something to keep in mind for next school year, because it's entirely possible that we'll be back, but there'll still be restrictions on certain subpopulations.
I'll look that number up too, and I can follow up with you, Brian.
Great, thank you.
Yep.
All right, we will take public
Brian,
comments.
We have 57 employees over 60, just FYI.
Okay. So that's a pretty good chunk. All right, we will take public comments. To comment on this agenda item, members of the public should use the raised hand button if using the Zoom app, or press *9 if using your phone. Do we have anybody who wishes to comment? I don't see anybody. So is there any further board discussion, or would someone like to make a motion to approve the MOU?
So moved.
Seconded.
All right. Any further board discussion? Otherwise, I will call the roll. Mr. Taglio?
Yes.
Mr. Ivanovich? Ms. Spicer?
Yes.
Ms. Serquet?
Yes.
All right, I vote yes. The motion was made by Ms. Serquet because Vladimir didn't unmute himself, and seconded by Jessica. Passed 5-0. Moving on to B6, future board meeting planning. Mr. Baer. Mr. Baer, you got to unmute again.
Thank you. We have one slide for this. Marcy, you can move forward. One of the things we want to look at is we have 5 regular board meetings scheduled between now and the end of the school year. We have discussed internally this idea that we want to really identify which of those tasks we have to complete, call them key agenda items here, that we need to complete before the end of the year, and really focus on those and not pay as close of attention, I guess, to those additional items that we typically have during the course of the school year. So you can see there are nine items there. And wanted to also look at the board meeting dates and make a determination about which dates we want to keep. And can we pare that number down? We do need two meetings. Again, this is if current laws remain in place, but we do have a requirement for two meetings at the end of the school year in order to pass a budget and the LCAP. So those will be important. And Randy, there's a day requirement between those, or is it just two consecutive meetings?
I think it's 7 days for the LCAP.
Okay, then it's the same for the budget too. Yes.
Yeah, it's actually two consecutive meetings. There's no day requirement.
Okay, great. This is a good time to interject that LCAP is up in the air right now. They are, I believe, word from Sacramento is they are working to loosen the LCAP requirements for the current year. And I believe there is intent to do that, but they're working through the linkage to the budget, because there is such tight linkage now between the LCAP and the school budgets that it's taking some additional time to figure that out. So with that said, Sandra, you had a comment on one of them, right?
Well, just my two blue ones on there. I will not have a curriculum council annual report. Mm. We actually have not held a curriculum council meeting this year. And the 21st is when we're expecting to get some guidance through a webinar from the state around LCAP. So I will know more after April 21st, hopefully.
Right. Randy, any commentary on many of those are related to the business side of the operation?
No, at this point, I plan to have all those brought before the board.
Okay.
I just add that based on our sort of perpetual calendar, all of these items are typically done at that second May meeting or in June. So we've got that, I think, at a sort of regular cadence, basically.
The other comment I wanted to make is that a lot of them depend upon the budget, of course. And as we've been told before, sort of a fake budget is going to come out. So we, even by June 8th, we will not be able to, we'll pass something, right? But there's only a small chance that it actually bears any relation to reality, that's all.
It's a fair point.
Yep. Let me just pause here for a minute and see if there's any public comment. If anyone would like to comment on this item, please use the raise hand button on your Zoom app or press star 9 on your phone. There is at least one.
Jeannie Tsai, go ahead. You can start.
Hi. I just wanted to take this time to thank you all for carrying on. I haven't prepared a statement, so this is going to be just stream consciousness. Thank you guys very much, and thank you, Aaron, as well as Sandra, for shepherding the teaching team throughout this process. This is more of a question, I guess, because I was looking at your planning process for the next few meetings, and I did not see the facilities discussion as an item. So I would just like to encourage you to continue moving forward with that. I think the public can participate, as I'm participating now. So please don't forget. And I would like to know what the thought process is behind that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't see anybody else. So board comment. Any board thoughts? I think, let me just, as in terms of meeting planning, obviously we had a regularly scheduled meeting next Monday, the 20th, which, unless there's something we want to get feedback on, especially given Sandra's comment that she will have more information on April 21st, it may make sense to cancel that meeting and then schedule another special meeting for the 27th, because that'll be 2 weeks from now and then also 2 weeks before the first meeting in May. So I'll just put that out there. Any thoughts about that? Any other comments?
I think that sounds reasonable.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that, you know, I think there was a question as to whether we pare down in all these. And I think other than moving the 20th to the 27th, we keep these meetings, at least to get a cadence of how we're doing, how we're doing financially, how we're doing curriculum-wise, et cetera.
Yeah, I think the other thing about paring down, which I guess is sort of implicit, was that, you know, there's a bunch of other things like school site updates and other things that we typically would have in our meeting agendas that were, I think, suggesting that we jettison entirely, just because this is an awkward format and takes a little longer and all the rest of that stuff. So anyone have any objections to that?
While I think it's awkward, I still like the idea of getting some mission moments in this. In some sort of way. I don't know if it is school sites, but I don't know. I know it's awkward, but this is a time where we're coming together as a whole LASD community and celebrate. You know, we are getting business done, but we do celebrate who we are too. So I really don't know how that would look, but I think it would help us as a community, LASD community.
So I'm not sure that I understand what you're saying. I wonder if we can accomplish that another way, because with the tremendous lift that's going on at the school sites, I'm not sure I want to ask them to spend time developing a presentation for a board meeting. I think it would be much better spent building that community within the element within the school sites, right? Be it elementary or junior high school, to build that community. Mm-hmm. Sandra and I can talk about how we can bring you examples of what's going on out there. I just don't want to put that on school sites to develop that right now.
No, I get it. That's I'm not 100% asking for that. I'm just trying to see how we could see it, and then actually just sharing with us that somehow give us access to the different things that are happening and informing us of those things would be enough. I just,
sure,
it's important. Yep. Even in this crazy time, we have some semblance of that.
Yeah, I would like to echo Jessica's thought about maybe just plugging us into what the schools are doing. Mm-hmm. Let us voluntarily step into those. Would be helpful, because I think it does kind of gives us the community pulse that we're probably going to miss for a while.
Yep, we can work on that.
Yeah, I second that. And, you know, if you can send around examples of recorded lessons or the video that was, you know, that you had but didn't play today, just it would be great to see some of that stuff more concretely. Okay.
Sure.
Any further discussion? All right. I'm going to, we're about to go into closed session. Oh, sorry.
Brian, yes. Just to clarify. Yep. So we are not holding the meeting on the 20th. We're adding a meeting on the 27th.
Right.
And then sticking with those four remaining dates.
For now.
Is that right?
That makes sense.
Okay. Just making sure.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? No. All right. We're going to retire to closed session. So we will now take public comment on closed session agenda items. If we have anyone who would like to comment, members of the public should use raised hand button if using the Zoom app, or press star 9 if dialed in on your phone. Do we have anyone who wishes to comment on the closed session agenda?
I'm not seeing anyone wishing to speak up.
Seeing anyone? All right, then I'm going to adjourn this meeting. I'm going to assume we will all want a 5 or 10 minute break. So I will see you all in closed session shortly. Thank you. All right, thanks.